Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Beyond and hello and welcome to IGN's weekly PlayStation show. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined once again by my good pals, Jada Griffin and Brian Altano. Howdy.
Beyond.
Hey.
Beyond. Happy, I believe the title of this episode is Tryptophan Hangover Episode, and it's, you know, the week after Thanksgiving, and we're all a little bit rusty, getting the wheels turning again, just in time to hit the brakes once more for, you know, the other holidays. Do you guys have a good time off? You play anything good? Do anything fun? Jada?
I played so much stuff over my little short break. It was my gameplay list was like a Thanksgiving platter of just different things where I played Talos Principle 2, Mega Man Battle Network, Atlas Fallen, Remnant 2 DLC, like Super Mario Wonder, just the whole gambit. I just played a little bit of everything.
Nice. That's good. I think I intended to do that, and then those plans more or less evaporated. Brian, what about you?
I played a lot of Super Mario RPG, which I loved. I finished it, which is not a PlayStation game, but it did get me thinking about how there should be more, like, let's take a thing from 20 years ago, give it like a slightly nicer coat of paint and just put it out without kind of mucking with it too much. I saw there was a sale for DuckTales Remastered, and it reminded me about how that game dropped the ball in terms of like remaking a game I really, really loved growing up, and then just adding a bunch of kind of like needless features and bells and whistles that detracted from the overall experience. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm a big fan of that sort of like here's the original, here's what it looks like here, and you can play it now, and it feels modernized, but it's still like at its soul a vintage game.
There was that Gargoyles remaster they did recently.
Yeah.
Which was,
yeah.
I mean, I think a really cool idea. It works especially well with the sort of, you know, those old like 16-bit Disney games, because you can, you know, there is a hand-drawn style guide to refer to. But there's still something a little bit wonky about like seeing the animation be that rigid.
Yeah, I agree.
It feels very like Flash gamey, you know? Mm. Anyway, we got some stuff to talk about. We're going to do a very silly thing later on. We're going to talk about the Game Awards categories that everyone else is too much of cowards to do, so we're doing them here. We got some real good ones. We got some best audio, get out of town. Best game, who cares? We got some real special ones. We're gonna get into that. But first, there is some stuff to talk about. Of course, as always, I think like last episode, we're like, we're recording this in advance, so if anything big happens, sorry about that. The big thing that, of course, happened literally the day after the episode went up is the Last of Us Part 2 remaster officially got finally announced, and I feel like this is one of the best ways that this has been handled so far this generation.
What's interesting is that the story leaked ahead of time, and I think the knee-jerk reaction, given what we've seen from re-releases, was that this is going to be like a straight, you know, $70, you know, 4K PS5 enhancement. And then the official press release came out with video and everything, and it's like, oh no, this is actually, like, if you own this game already, this is a great deal. Like, this is about the best way you can the best way you can do this is give it out for free.
Right.
But they're charging $10 for the upgrade, and I feel like that's the ultimate way to kind of like meet people in the middle on this.
Yeah. So I mean, like, compared to what was it? It was Spider-Man Remastered and Ghost of Tsushima, where there was this whole like weird thing of like where you owned it and where you bought it, and it was,
yep,
you had to basically just like squint, look at the press release, and try to figure out if you owed them $20 or $5. But either way, it sort of felt like it felt like you were paying what, like $15 or $10 for just visual and audio improvements, whereas this actually feels like a proper special edition. The big addition is they have a roguelike mode called No Return, which kind of sounds awesome. I don't know if I'll mess with it, because it also sounds terrifying, but like, that's, I feel like something that people are totally gonna, you know, t- totally get into.
I'm just hoping I get a room with two Rat Kings. I want to have to fight two Rat Kings at once.
Man. You know what? If anyone can handle it, I think it's you. I think you could.
Yeah.
It's such an awesome, I would think that they would just
design.
They would just fight each other and just leave you out of it, but I don't know.
Yeah, in terms of like value, if you look at, I mean, I did a whole video, I guess what, last year about The Last of Us Part 1 remastered, which was or was that a remake? I mean, I forget what
it was. A remake.
That.
Yeah,
it was a remake.
Yes, a remake.
And that was a $70 game that didn't really have any new modes or anything like that added to it. There wasn't really cut content or anything. It was also available on the PS Plus collection at the time, like in its remastered form. So the game originally launched and then got like the kind of PS4 up-res version a few years later.
A year later.
And then got the full-on PS5 remake. And that one stung. Like for $70,
that sucked. And also, we'd already had it once. Like, we'd already had the PS4 version is the best version. And again, that was that. I think that added enough feature. That added what, like photo mode, and it looked like noticeably different. Like,
it looked a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, then the sort of, I don't know. Yeah, part one was like, I think if that had been $40 or $50, it would have been a different story. But full on 70 for a game that a lot of people already bought twice felt, it just, you know, that stung. Yeah, and this case, I don't know, it doesn't seem that bad. And also, shortly after this thing got announced, it went on sale, which feels very this doesn't dare I say it, this doesn't feel like Jim Ryan era Sony. Like, this is, you know, it feels kind of generous. So in addition to the roguelike thing, which is cool, that feels like a kind of getting like RE4 Mercenaries vibes from it. Like, you know, it seems like a very, you know, arcadey approach to, you know, how to take it on. I also love that they added free play for the guitar, and I think there's going to be like other instruments, which is
I think there's other ways to like augment the sound and stuff like that. I don't know exactly. I don't remember the exact what they're adding, but a bunch of ways to mess with the sound and have fun with it.
You can get pedals.
Like a whole bunch of videos out there of people playing the guitar sections and like playing full on songs, and like, I like the idea that like you can just load that up from the title screen and just be like guitar mode.
I mean, that's great. It's brilliant. I love it.
It shows that they listen to their what their community liked. Like,
yeah,
it may have been a small section of their community, but it's something their community obviously grabbed onto, and I'm glad that they invested the resources into making it even better for that.
Like reading this list of stuff that they added for this, and I think at this point we're kind of used to there being like, okay, they added DualSense features. Okay, the graphics are better. Like, there's a certain amount that you would, it is the bare minimum for taking a game and dragging and dropping it onto a PS5 and charging anything additional. Like, there's that's, we expect that. That should be the case. It should look better, obviously. But to be like, there's also unlimited guitar. You're like, oh, okay, that's, I didn't expect. There's also roguelike mode. Oh, sure, why not? And so it feels like DVDs back in the day, where it'd be
so
like,
the thing is here is that like I feel like all of the stuff they're adding had to happen because when you put the two versions side by side, the naked eye cannot tell. Like, again, like if we'll have them running in person eventually, but like everything I've seen of like these two games side by side are like, it's the most tiniest, minuscule, slightly bigger upgrade. And I'll say it again, like, once we see them running, once we're playing them, we have controller in hand, we've got the DualSense going, like, then I think it'll make a lot more sense. But these modes are doing a lot of the lifting because the side by side is less impressive than when we saw The Last of Us Part One remake, right?
Yeah.
It's weird that, I mean, I guess it makes sense because at the tail end of a console life cycle, there's a, you know, bigger install base, but like, I don't know, The Last of Us remastered, that seems like, I don't know, if maybe they sat on The Last of Us a little bit longer, it could have been like a cross-gen launch title, in the same way that, you know, The Last of Us Part Two came out, what, 20 minutes before the PS5 dropped? Like, they,
yeah.
I was so just ready to be like, no, I'll wait, I'll play it on PS5. And like, you know, ultimately, I think I wound up playing it there, but it was like, there's that feeling of it's a PS4 game still. Like, there's not that, it doesn't do anything, you know, extra special. Yeah. I don't know, I dig this. We get these, you know, we get this stupid like pre-order bonusy, you know, collector's editions or like special editions or day one edition, whatever it's called. And it's like, it just feels like cheesy kind of like swag bag stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have like a soft spot for the proper, like a proper re-release of something that is like, that really kind of looks back on what people liked about it and, you know, doubles down on that. And this feels like, you know, this feels like a two disc steelbook DVD that you'd get of a movie that came out 5 years earlier. You know, it's like, oh, hey, it's the, you know, the gold box Blu-ray of Lord of the Rings trilogy, like that kind of thing, where it's just, you know, they took the time to make something that people would actually want to collect, as opposed to just being like, here's some crap, pay more.
The loss. No, go for it, Jada.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, it's, I know a lot of people like initially had that knee jerk reaction of being upset, like, mm-hmm. Oh, why aren't we getting this for free? We got to pay for this. Honestly, for me, with everything that's included, like $10, it's like a $10 upgrade. That is like nothing.
Yeah.
We have spent a whole lot more money on a whole lot less value when it comes to games or upgrades or whatever. You know, we've seen other games. Mortal Kombat is in trouble because they're selling fatalities for like $10 or $20.
Yeah, I think the Halloween one was like $15 or something, right?
Yeah, and they had exactly.
They had to do like an apology make good and give out free skins afterwards because it's like, you can get, I mean, the whole value conversation is always weird with mm-hmm. games because it's like, how much is something worth if you can finish it in three? Like I was talking about Mario RPG before, right? Like that's a game from like the early 90s that you can finish in 15 hours and Nintendo selling it for $60. So like not the best value for or best bang for your buck, but like in terms of just getting an upgrade here and an excuse to replay this game again for $10 with all the extra content, like I feel good about it. The mm-hmm. the knee-jerk reaction I think was because like Naughty Dog's been kind of weird since this game came out because they put out a remastered or a remade version of a old ass game for $70. And then they just repeatedly kicked their multiplayer mode, mm-hmm. their sort of big factions expansion type thing down the line. And like, no one really knows the status of that. There was rumors that it was like canceled or like kind of like getting sidelined for a bit. And in between those things, they launched a TV show, which is cool. But, like people were kind of like, when's the next story from you guys? And so when this thing leaked, it was like, no, not that. We don't want that. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. but then the full picture became more clear. And like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm cool with it.
And that's a fair criticism for fans to make, to where like,
sure,
we seem to get a lot of more remasters than we do original things from Naughty Dog. And if we were to get a remaster of something, Jack and Daxter, fans would be a lot more happier to see something like that instead of, you know, something that's so recent in our minds. But also I get it. Like it's been what, 3 years now since Last of Us 2 came out. It's actually not that, it's not that bad of a timeline for a $10 upgrade on something. And like I said earlier in the show, like Last of Us 1, when that PS4 version came out a year later, like it was, I believe it was June of 2013, and then it was July of 2014. So like, it's not like there's no precedent. We've also gotten tons of Uncharted, you know, remasters and remake. Not
the thing,
remakes,
the thing I really like here, and it's, I guess there's a nice parallel with Rockstar, which also, you know, GTA 5 came out, and then 20 minutes later it was out on PS4, and it was like, you got to move your stuff over and pay it, buy it again. They just recently made some headlines because one of their old devs who's been gone from the company for ages was like blogging about, you know, just behind the scenes stuff from a million years ago. And they, I don't think it was like a cease and desist, but they were like, we don't like that. And he was like, oh, fine, I'll delete it. And I don't know. I hate that we don't get more insight into how things are made. And so like the fact that there are like deleted levels with director commentary in this new thing, like that is, again, like DVD special features in the best way possible. I'm super mm-hmm. into that. Like, I like to know how things get made. You know, I want more stuff like that. And yeah, it's, I don't know, to have that added level of like making of featurette type of stuff paired with, you know, if you're going to repackage something, like throw in some scraps, throw in some,
I like, you know, I like the Lost Levels naming too. Cause you know, if you couldn't tell by this far into the show, I'm a big Nintendo fan. And I remember when Nintendo put out the Lost Levels, which was Super Mario 2 in Japan. And it was like too tough for them to name it that in America. So they put out the weird vegetable Mario 2. But the big thing they added in Super Mario Brothers 2 in Japan was like evil mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, The nice. Last of Us has that already. Like, that's the whole plot of the game. This is perfect. I don't know if anyone at the studio put that together, but I like that. It, to me, it feels like a nice little nod.
No,
that is really funny. Yeah. I also I don't think I ever made the connection. Maybe we've talked about this before, but like the fact that it's like, oh, the most again, weird parallels between like Mario and Last of Us this year, where they both had like amazing adaptations that did really well, and we're like, oh crap, like video games can work mm-hmm. in other mediums, great. And they both had like sort of new games, I guess, at this point. But
they also also got that Pedro Pascal SNL Mario Kart.
That's right, yeah.
Last of Us short.
But yeah, it's I mean, it is funny that it's like about this working class dude fighting mushrooms. Like that's an odd element. Anyway, moving on. Speaking of things that got left on the cutting room floor, they had a big old fan extravaganza event here in San Francisco that I didn't go to, but Tony Todd did go to it. The voice of Venom, the Candyman himself, and there was a panel where he was talking about Spider-Man stuff. And said that Insomniac only used about 10% of his Venom dialogue in Spider-Man 2, which doesn't surprise me. I feel like Venom, you know, now that we're that thing's kind of in the rearview mirror a little bit, I feel like we didn't get enough Venom in that game, considering yeah, they used Venom as a big marketing thing.
In hindsight, I'm pretty surprised at how reserved they were with him as a character in terms of the pacing of the game. He didn't really show up until like second half, last third officially. And when he was there, he was there. So like they, mm-hmm. once he was like fully ingrained in the script and in the gameplay and everything like that, like, yes, awesome. But yeah, it took a while to get to that, considering, you know, he's on the statue and everything. And, you know, they made such a big deal in the marketing and all that. But, you know, they obviously had to give other villains some space there too. But yeah, I do wonder if this means like we're going to get story DLC that's more focused on him, or like even a full on sequel, like a full on spin-off Venom game would be awesome. Like Max and I were talking about this yesterday and how like you could totally drop it into the Insomniac engine, but it would be weird because like, is he gonna like get phone calls and listen to podcasts and stuff like that? Like maybe like he's not gonna go to his like aunt's house and clean up. Like there'll be a lot of stuff in there that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But
no, he would go to his like studio apartment and eat a whole frozen bag of bagel bites, and then to a fancy restaurant, eat lobsters out of the lobster tank.
You guys see that? You saw the latest exploit for somebody breaking the game to get out and just do regular like side missions as Venom.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's crazy. Awesome because they patched that specifically because people found a way, and then people were mm-hmm. like, nope, found another way. I love when people do that because this is a console game. This is not even like people are using PC mods and stuff like that. Like they're just like, nope, gonna keep doing it. Gotta get Venom on a bicycle or whatever.
Stop patching it. People are having a great time. It's
like... I understand the first patch because I guess it was like permanently corrupting save files, supposedly.
Yeah.
But so hopefully this newest one doesn't do that. But
let's hope. We'll see. Yeah, I don't know. So again, Tony, I love that this is from Tony Todd, who basically sort of like leaked the release window from a bathtub initially and then was like, I was probably fever dream tired or something. You're like, all right, man. He clearly has just a complete ferocious disregard for non-disclosure agreements. So, you know, he's like, oh, there's stuff where he, you know, he said recorded lines for scrap scenes when Miles Morales hit the symbiote, which is like, okay, I'm down. That's an angle that I'm, you know, curious about. Mm-hmm. I kind of just want Eddie Brock because he's just like an unapologetic asshole.
Yeah.
And yeah. And to your point, Brian, about like, would he listen to podcasts and like, yeah, I feel like he'd be into Rogan, you know, like, and then he'd also probably just talk to the symbiote a lot of the time. Like they'd have like long chats while they're just swinging around. And then they
also feel like he would be, I feel like he would be all about J. Jonah Jameson's. I feel like he would like call.
Oh,
in.
Yeah.
He would call in. I love
that. You gotta go find a payphone for no reason. It's like, why are you using a payphone?
Well, he would wreck something and then call in and be like, that no good Spider-Man made a mess again. It's like, man, this is not good.
I want that. I want to just frame again, like Eddie Brock's not even in that universe, I don't think. And then we're just like, make him do prank phone calls and frame Spider-Man. So that's fun. All right, moving on. I think it's time we started getting into awards season. I think, you know, obviously there's the Game Awards is around the corner. Yeah, mm-hmm. So we're going to be IGNs. We're going to be doing the IGN Awards very soon, having all sorts of fun stuff about that. Ultimately, it's a bunch of pomp. It's very silly. It's all made up. Whether or not a game is released in any given year is just a completely arbitrary measure of time. And, you know, it's still fun. So we decided we'd have a little bit more fun with it and do Game of the Year awards categories that nobody else is doing, aka the Beyoncés. I thought that was a good. I don't know if we're gonna get sued or not for that, but anyway,
you're gonna get sued for that. I'm okay. Not.
What, no, there's a D in there. It's the Beyond.
The Beyondles. Is that okay. No? Okay.
It's gonna be a D for defense when you're on the witness stand for that one, because you're gonna go to jail.
Going to jail. Whatever. I'll get to meet Beyonce. But no. So we wanted to just pick a bunch of wacky categories.
Totally worth it.
We get to meet Beyonce's lawyer.
Do a crime, and yeah, you get to see them in court, and they sign autographs on restraining orders or whatever. I don't know how we got up here already.
She's got nothing going on. She's gonna go to court against a PlayStation podcast.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I want to first shout out, like, Mega 64 used to always do like the dumbest Game Awards categories videos, and I think kind of definitely planted a little bit of a seed for that. But I wanted to sort of walk a fine line between completely wackadoo off the wall categories, but also stuff that we kind of did stop and think about a little bit. So let's start things off with the video game food that we wanted to actually eat the most. That's the name of the category. Best performance by a food in a computer game on the PlayStation this year. Mm-hmm. We have a handful of nominees, but we also would really love to help. We'd love to have some help from our fine viewers and listeners to not just vote on what we've got picked out, but also submit some ideas of your own, whether that's, you know, nominees or just categories. We run a very loose ship around these parts. It's a real it's just a real squiggly schooner, as it were.
I'll be putting some stuff up in the PlayStation Facebook Beyond group, so definitely keep an eye out for that. But definitely, in the meantime, before that goes up, feel free to submit stuff if you beat me to the bunch.
Yeah.
Did you say PlayStation?
PlayStation.
Yes. We're talking about food.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, the nominees that we picked so far for the video game food we wanted to actually eat the most of the 2023. First, Thirsty Suitors, which had a bunch of awesome South Asian cooking stuff. I thought that had very action-packed cooking sequences. On a similar beat, there's also Venba, which was much more chill in its cooking, but also really put your memory to the test in terms of what you were making. And I think it's really weird that there's two games that both taught me a lot about, like, South Asian cuisine. I wasn't really that wasn't on my bingo card this year. Pizza Possum, we talked about that a bunch. That possum likes to eat not just pizza but other things too. All of the food in that game I thought looked succulent and delectable.
Looks so good.
Baldur's Gate 3 has a lot of great food and then a lot of rotten food. I think we've all probably thought about they got little sausages in there.
Gotta take good with the bad with Baldur's Gate.
And then, of course, there's the Spider-Man 2 wheat cakes, which I think are both like a little bit of good sort of fan service to the classic.
Can I add a write-in vote that I just remembered just to show
you
how
you could have just written it in. You could have written it in. You're on the run of show, but we'll go.
I know, but I just remembered it right now, and I'd rather say it than write it. There's all this food in, and I know Jada spent a lot of time here. There's all this food in the shooting gallery in Resident Evil 4 Remake that the merchant has just left for you to kind of like munch on between shooting cardboard pirates or whatever, and it's beautiful. There's like, it's almost, I think it's like a paella, and there's some bread. There's also that whole dinner sequence in there where you have to ring the bell in the right order. And there's glasses of wine and a nice dinner painted on the wall. So yeah, there's some good food there. Just throwing that out there.
Okay. The first one I'm with you, but the second one is just a painting, right? Cause there's not,
yeah,
the
so what?
The table's set, but it's set with puzzles, right? It's not like you can't eat the puzzle.
No, I think there's dinner rolls on the table. I like it,
but
bread.
Just rolls, not like.
Yeah, just rolls.
All right, you know. Tactical rolls. Okay, so yeah, those are some good. I forgot about the shooting gallery hors d'oeuvres. Mm-hmm. I think those are, that's a shoe-in right there. Those are great.
Up there, also like with Baldur's Gate, tons of disgusting food in that game too, right? Yep. Like there's a lot of like, you open a pot or whatever in a villager's house, and Leon's like, Jesus, what the hell was this asshole cooking? You know? Worms again. Nights.
I do have an honorable mention for Remnant 2. There is a whole boss fight where it's this like over engorging like servant of a castle.
Not really selling it.
And he's like sitting there with a feast, and it requires you to eat from the feast to start the boss fight. But this food is rotten, like probably years, decades old food that is there.
So we should give it an award for being succulent and delectable. Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Yes, yes. And
if
you
they do, how about this? If they do a remnant
character...
prequel to when that food was fresh, maybe. Oh, but I don't know.
I mean, you know what? There was no food like that in Remnant One, to my knowledge.
I think they had all those procedurally generated levels. I wish we'd gotten some good old fashioned like Super Nintendo game levels where it's like a dessert level and a cheese level. Like, I don't know. Like a good old, like a one that looks like big Christmas presents, like in one of the old Batman games.
A couple weeks ago, I tweeted out a picture of the, there's like in one of the Mysterio side levels where you go into like, I think you go in his house and there's like a secret door in downstairs. He has there's a pizza in Spider-Man 2, right? There's like just a pizza on the counter, but it's also next to a hot dog with ketchup and mustard. And it's just it's a weird combination because like usually people order a pizza and they just have pizza. Nobody is like, all right, I'm going to order a pizza and then have a hot dog. And then between them, we're going to have hot dog condiments. But the pizza itself looks good. So I'm going to give a nod there. I think there's outside of the wheat cakes in Spider-Man, I think Spider-Man's also doing some good stuff with pizza. And that goes a long way in my book.
That's fair. I feel like I just didn't want to give it the, you know, too much recognition because the first one had such good pizza, you know,
it did.
It's pretty good. Yeah, but yeah, you can't make a game in New York and not have good pizza. That's
or hot dogs. You got to put them together. Pizza Possum had amazing food.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was good because it was all cartoon food, and cartoon food is by definition always the most, like, you always imagine how delicious it would be.
What was great about Pizza Possum too is that when he ate it really quickly, he would get huge and then walk around very slowly. And I think that's an added element a lot of these games had not considered. Especially, you know, we're recording this in the post Thanksgiving week, maybe a couple of us put on some pounds as evidenced by the scale I got on this morning. And, you know, I think it's good to have that level of realism in games where a pizza possum can get a little fat in the gut walking around.
I respect it. I think he put in some good work this year. And then also he had espressos, which do help speed things up. But I'm glad they didn't put that as a
so game lovely. So lovely. All right. I hear real France is just like that.
Probably. I think it was it set in France or Spain. I don't
no
even
one
know.
Knows. I don't no know. I made that up.
It's Europe. Possumland.
Somewhere
check
Europe.
It out. It's like $6.
All right. So those are our bad food categories. If you have other ones, please let us know. You can hop in the Beyond Facebook group, or you can shoot us an email, beyond@ign.com. Our next category, oh boy, there's some big contenders in this one. The things that killed us the most in games. the first one, I feel like two of us jumped on this at once, but those little pointy chicken things that would just dive bomb you in Star Wars Jedi Survivor, like those little guys who would be running around a creek bed and then they would just come at you like a shotgun blast. And it was always when you were just done, like, you know, just fighting a bunch of scout troopers or whatever, and you were like, cool, I'm almost, you know, I'm gonna go heal now, and then one of these guys would be like, whoa, just go right in your ass, and just you would die. Horrible.
I believe
things.
They're called rakas, if
rakas?
I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm always one for looking up the official nomenclature of a Star Wars animal, but I don't even like these guys enough to do that. I'm not about to do that.
The amount of times I died to these stupid little chickens after clearing a group of enemies only to be rear-ended in the back of my ankles after healing to full and dying in one shot was just painful.
Yeah.
So many times, these dang little chickens. They're just...
No, they in the Jedi Master mode or what? Aren't they one hit that they kill you?
Oh, they're one. Yeah, on Grandmaster, they're one
That's
hit KOs.
Horrible. One I hit would. KOs. Why would anyone? How are those people on that planet not all dead? How would they even settle on that planet? That's vicious.
I think actually, once you get to like max health, if you have like the defense like perks and stuff slotted, I think you can survive one hit and leave with like 10% HP. But I was not. I'm all about the offense in my game. So, in most games, so. I was getting one shot till the end.
So flip side, there's also, I can't even say this. It's Swamp and then F word from Lies of P. Brian, I think you wrote that one in. If people don't like swamps in
I forget
Souls
his name, but I
with.
Just called him the Swamp Effer. He was for some odd reason, and it's weird. Like for every Soulsborne or Souls, like every conversation with everyone you talk to about these games goes exactly the same way. You name a boss that kicked your ass up and down for an entire weekend, and some guy that you know goes, oh, I beat him on my first try. It was so easy. But this is what happened with me with the Swamp Effer in Lies of P. This is just like, he's one of the more sort of like traditional Souls-like, Bloodborne-ian, disgusting monster beasts. Wet, slimy, multiple phases, hops around in his own turds, beats the living crap out of you. Just disgusting, gross-ass, classic FromSoft-inspired creature, right? He's less like mechanical. There's no, you know, puppeteer robot stuff about him. He's just a beast. He's just a disgusting bog creature. And man, he made me throw my controller. He made me like so angry for like a full weekend. And then I killed him and I felt great. And I talked to other people about him and they're like, oh, beat him on my first try. Like, look at this thing. This is like, he doesn't really fit the theme for the rest of the game. But you did?
No, I didn't even get to him.
Damn it. And it was really rewarding because like all the stuff after him is really cool. And he's a little too silly to be like super mad at because he's got a huge butt and he's got these dangly googly eyes that like...
Yeah, he looks like somebody in Cirque du Soleil being a frog.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
Yeah, like if you hung eyeballs in your car and they're, you know, on the rear view, like that's what it looks like up here. And they're just like weird little jelly beans or like pomegranate seeds. It's hard to get really mad at him, you know? Okay. And he does grow this kind of like exoskeleton, but it's more like crab-like.
Okay.
Yeah, I hate this guy, but I killed him.
Okay. We should give him an award, and then you can go in the swamp and give it to him, feed it to him with his little mandibles or whatever. Another nominee. There's also Salazar in RE4 Pro mode specifically.
Another one, Jada. I'm sure you beat Salazar on your first try on Pro mode.
Always.
There was a thing. there was a way to one hit him that I did
with the golden egg.
You throw the golden egg.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's the trick with aristocrats is you just gotta whip a golden egg at them and they
the pain of losing something so valuable all over their face is just enough to shame them to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that. And I don't care if it's cheap. It's funny.
It's very funny. Care. So I don't know. Yeah. Here's one. There's always, you know, that big argument about what the toughest thing in a Soulsborne is. But I think a lot of players can agree that Lords of the Fallen's toughest enemy was the camera itself. This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Toughest boss in that game. I feel like everybody else in that game was not necessarily a pushover, but like easy enough for me to like not struggle on it too hard. But the camera, I would just like walk out of a room and it would just like lock in a corner, and then 5, you know, witch guys with pinpoint accuracy from 600 miles away would just like knock me to my death.
Now we give, I want to, you know, give these guys a benefit of the doubt, because they have actually been patching. Like I'm actually enthusiastically reading the patch notes for Lords of the Fallen, because they're really good at like actually hitting the, like they have apparently pinpoint accuracy on the things that are pissing people off, because they, I know like, you know, Travis was like, yeah, the bosses are too easy. And they were like, we made the bosses harder, went through and, you know, retooled all the bosses. And also those little wizards who would just like, you know, one shot you with yellow piss lasers from across the map. They don't have as good aim anymore. And it's like, cool, you nerfed the piss lasers. Thank you for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, they've been really good, because they also had their new game plus had like no checkpoints, only the manual ones you could place. And then they're like, this is too much. So they took it back, and now each successive playthrough, you get less and less of those checkpoints, those like stationary checkpoints. They take them away as you get through new game pluses. So then you just have to get, they imagine by the time you're on your 10th new game plus run,
I think they should do a mode where there's one enemy in the entire game and he's scared of you and you have to go find him and kick his ass.
Just gotta go hide, you gotta go
just hide him. Yeah, hide and seek. All right, next to the things that killed us the most, Ghost Runner 2, our own reflexes.
Yes.
That's a shoo-in right there.
Ghost Runner 2 is a lot of fun, very action oriented. I love the first one. I died quite a bit of times, probably a good like 400 times, I'd say, across like the 15 chapters in the first one. The second one is getting probably close to that point as well, just because, you know, sometimes you try to reflect a bullet and you're just too slow and the bullet hits you in the face.
So I previewed this at Gamescom, and they had a thing set up where when you started your little appointment, they had your card. And at the end of the demo, it would say how many times you died, and you had to like write your number of shame and put it on this big wall. And there was this big wall next there. It's all like, you know, game journals, suck it games. And I'm like, oh no. And I did actually okay in the beginning. And then they kicked me off my station because somebody else had an appointment, and I was just like tagging along with Stella. And then Stella, I think, had to, she finished hers. And I was like, wow, Stella, I would have done way better. Prove me wrong. I didn't have to get I did not complete or whatever. And then
Stella's up there with Jada and Mitchell Saltzman in terms of just like the pound for pound nastiest pure gameplay, will kick anybody's ass. Like I that's one of the, if we ever got challenged to like a street fight by a bunch of like or another website or a bunch of like YouTubers or something like that, I'd be like, send in these three. That they're gonna take.
They're
like,
good at games. They'll fight well for us, probably. Who knows?
Yeah, if we got dojo rushed by like a bunch of guys in the comments section who were like, IGN sucks at games, those are the three I would send in to kill.
Yeah, they're definitely in my party that I hide behind. And then finally, for the things that killed us the most, the dead batteries in the flashlight and Alan Wake 2. I feel like those are the real enemy. The batteries. Yeah, one of those ones that you rev up, like, it's got like a vroom, 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 vroom. You know, those are like the kind you shake. I'm not going to do on the screen.
But I got one of those like industrial flashlights years ago, because I was like, oh, we live in a state that's like prone to weird blackouts and power outs and stuff like that. And like, it's just become a toy that my kid pulls out of like the random utility drawer and just like shines around all the time. It's had the same batteries in it for probably 5 years now. So Alan Wake, shit up, man.
In the 80s and 90s, you had those like big, those big
energizers anymore.
That's true. Also, like, it's going to die the second I need it.
You know the plastic flashlights, the big tube ones with the white switch that came in different colors that were like everywhere in the 90s. And those took like 4D batteries, and then they would die immediately.
In I feel 10
like he's,
seconds.
He's got one of those. And now, you know, in the future, we have like LEDs, which can run forever on like a, I don't know, like a single button cell or whatever. Like it's
single
just,
watch
like moon,
battery.
Moon yeah, it's like, or whatever. That, yeah, it's like, I love how like cell phones break modern horror, but like, like the LED logic breaks Alan Wake battery logic.
I actually really like this. Producing for us today, Tom Jorgensen wrote in, did Alan Wake 2 accidentally make a great advertisement for Energizer by sticking you with store brand batteries?
Yeah, he did.
We've actually, you know, I mean, it's funny because we use, you know, when we record in the studio, we use lavalier mics, which are like wireless, and they always use AA batteries. And I remember just early on being like, that seems terrifically wasteful. And then you know, one of the studio guys was like, yeah, except that like the second you start using a rechargeable battery, its health starts declining and you have no way of gauging how long its battery will actually last. Right. Whereas if you pop in a fresh set of AA's, there's sort of a, you know, there's a known, you know, there's known a known quantity. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's a little thanks for coming to our TED talk about batteries. Next so up
tell,
in our...
tell us what killed you the most in 2023.
Yeah, let us know. So you can also, if you're just, you know, watching along on YouTube or whatever, just hop in the comments. Leave your own either nominations or vote on these, and we'll do a real honest good old-fashioned good old democracy. It'll go fine. Next category, most bizarre ability or spell. JD, you put down Gold Digger from Remnant 2.
Yes. So Remnant 2, after you finish the game for the first time, you unlock this Explorer class. Explorer or Adventurer? One of the two. Either way, once you get that class level 5, you unlock this ability called Gold Digger, which basically allows you to pull out a shovel and dig into the ground, and out comes a fountain of either health, haste, attack power, or defense. It's just very random in this game that's all about guns and, you know, swords and axes and stuff. They can just whip out a shovel and just start digging a hole, even mid-boss fight. So, very strange ability, and I give it a shout-out for the name being Gold Digger.
I like that.
Clever.
Another game where you can whip out a shovel and dig holes and things is, of course, Baldur's Gate, but something weirder you can do in there is cast a magic spell that covers everything in grease. And I swear, the grease in this game is like one of my favorite mechanics, because I guess I just didn't. I think the fact that the logo of the icon for it is like a little yellow glowing pig, and it's just it's like, I don't know. It's very silly.
That is my prep work for every fight we go into in Baldur's Gate, is I take out bottles of grease and I just fling it at all the entry points. So all these people are like running upstairs covered in grease to get to me and falling. And we're just pelting them with spells, arrows.
Oh my god, I need to do more of that.
Throwing ranged attacks at
needs
them,
more
weapons.
Grease. also equally greasy, and this is again a bit of quite a few bones of contention. A real choking hazard worth the Mortal Kombat 1 Thanksgiving fatality, which they unfortunately got all mired in microtransactions and stuff. But feeding somebody an entire Thanksgiving dinner to kill them is especially fitting.
Very good.
Yeah, back in my day, you know, fatalities only cost a quarter, and you had to go down to the local arcade to do them. And
sometimes they got done against you for that quarter.
So. Exactly. You couldn't even do them at all. You just flail around, just and then shrug. I love that. I love that, like, not doing a fatality thing where you just like you do like one punch and then you look at the camera like Anyway, and then also in here, the Mega Man Battle Network candle.
Yeah, there is so the Mega Man Battle Network Anniversary Collection. There's an ability called Candle, and there's 3 different tiers of it. So there's stronger candles. And you basically plop the candle on one of your spaces on your 3x3 grid, and it just heals you over time.
I don't like this, because if you're supposed to be
power
like
of aromatherapy, I guess.
I think we should get like an IT specialist in here, because if you are in an actual battle network, I feel like lighting a small candle is going to be very bad for
lighting a candle inside of a fire networking. Or inside of a computer. Yeah, probably yeah. Not.
What are the benefits? Is if it's like a water cooled machine, it's okay. But if I don't know, we should try that on our PS5. Just light some candles in there. See how that advanced cooling handles
that. The new models disk drive section.
Best dressed. This is a somewhat self-explanatory category, but also you kind of, it's a broad one, because you can, a lot of games you can just dress up, such as Baldur's Gate 3. I don't know, that's kind of all over the place. There's some cool outfits. There's some great undergarments
cool
in that game.
There's lots of dyes. You can dye stuff to make your armors look pretty cool.
It's also like,
and
it's such
a bunch of pieces.
It's such a pain to find good outfits, because you wind up with like a stupid hat, and you're like, well, I guess I'll give it to my friend who doesn't have a hat. And I don't know, like I have a Starion dressed like a freaking pirate right now. And I don't know, it's corny. And then
it's one of the things I want Baldur's Gate to add. I want the ability to have just like custom clothing, like layered armor or clothing over it.
Okay.
So that I can look like a ridiculous person, but still have all the bonuses of all my spells and stuff that's attached to gear. That's what we want in games.
Yeah,
we want to look ridiculous while we do cool things, but still be strong.
And then counterpoint, there's of course Lies of P, which continues the FromSoft tradition of your clothing really not making that huge of a difference. So you can kind of just do the whole Fashion Souls thing. And Ryan, you made a real ass of yourself in that game, huh?
Yeah, literally. I wore the ugly donkey mask for the entire game. And it was weird because I put it on in like the first half hour. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. I'm sure there's going to be tons more stuff like this. There wasn't. So I just wore it the whole game. I changed my like, you know, weird trench coat and cloak and stuff a lot. But like, for the most part, I was just dressed like a donkey, literally, until the very end. It was great.
Fair enough.
Had a good time.
Then there's Diablo 4, which I love because we got all these photos, early screenshots people were posting on their, you know, on Twitter, Instagram, whatever, other characters, and they look like incredible. They're like the most detailed, amazing looking, like, you know, barbarian fur, like druid tooth necklaces. And you're like, oh my God, this character looks so sick. It's such a good designed character. And then the majority of the game, they're like the, you know, they're the size of a wine cork running around on the screen. You're like, you can't even see them. That's just, I don't know. That's that Diablo. Baldur's Gate has that to a certain degree, depending on how zoomed in you like to play.
I had a good time with the first season. Me and a friend, we did Avatar themed characters. And so I was Korra. So I dressed in like all brown furs and stuff like that. And it was pretty reliable. And we just zoomed in and she did, was she Azula? I believe she was Azula.
Okay. Or whatnot. So for those of you keeping track at home, it was Azula.
Yeah, I believe so.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Then there's Street Fighter 6. I think like Street Fighter, usually people, I like that they always are like, ooh, it's this season's Street Fighter outfit. Like, and we're like, ooh, you know, Ryu's got a beard this year. Wow. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, Guile's got a beard. Ew. But they also added character customization and creation in this, which is fun. I don't know. It's just like a very, I guess it's a very streetwear forward, you know, series.
I mean, Street Fighter 6 has a lot of really cool clothing. They did a really good job. Like, all the clothing you could buy in the single player mode is really cool that you could customize your avatar with. I think, but also just the fact that you could completely create inhumane creatures that should never have seen the light of day in Street Fighter 6 is just miraculous, you know.
Yeah.
I saw people that would like, there was like, they would take like those Oni masks, but they would increase the size like 1,000-fold, so it was like covering their entire body.
That's horrible.
And so
I think that's the mark of a good character creator, is you can make like the most beautiful, like idealized versions, but then you could also make just like, I don't know, Shrek's ass or whatever, just like something unthinkably horrible.
Yeah.
And then finally, I was a big fan of the outfits and the hairstyles in Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I like specifically they had like, where there's the mullet, which everyone loved, you can look like, you know, Joe Dirt with a lightsaber, but also the sort of nods to Kyle Katarn and Dash Rendar. Like there was the Outrider armor, which was very much like, something clicked and I was like, oh, I'm playing a modern Shadows of the Empire with lightsabers. I'm into it. So
cool. Know.
Yeah.
So cool. That was such a nice thing, especially after like I feel like they course corrected over what they needed to from the first game in such a great way, because the first game was like, I remember.
Ponchos.
Yeah,
ponchos.
It was just ponchos. And they apparently added those like at the finish line and during game dev, and like they just wanted to put treasure chests all over the world, and like it was just different colored ponchos. And then this one, they're like, nah, man, do whatever you want. Have a great time out there. Dress like ponchos a classic again. Star Wars character.
Now moving on. Keeping with the, I don't even know how you segue for that. Wettest liquid. What is the wettest liquid of 2023's games? There's all kinds of liquids. People get worked up about the liquids in games. Sometimes people say the water isn't wet enough in Spider-Man. Yep. They zoom in on the puddles. They don't like it. I want to point out that the big liquid in Spider-Man 2 this year was symbiote slime, which was all over the place. There was too much of it. I didn't like it. But then I got rid of it. It was fine.
There's a part where there's a lot. Like, which is interesting because there's a part in the beginning where there's a lot of sand, and obviously the opposite of sand is wet.
Yeah, so they did a lot of great stuff with sands and liquids. We'll get to sand in a second. That's actually our next category, most sand. But first, it's sometimes a liquid. I guess if you get it hot, it is. If it's not too viscous, grease in Baldur's Gate 3. They hit substance from Baldur's Grease 3. Speaking of which, there's also Gollum's wet hair and head. We don't need to nominate Gollum for anything, do we?
I put it in there because I feel like it's not getting nominated for anything.
And, that's fair.
You know, one of the big reasons it's because it's shit. But I thought it was worth mentioning that he does look extremely wet in that game, and then he has like wet, like the weird. Yeah, like Simpsons wiggles, you know.
I think it'd be really funny if like the one award that game got was like Podcast Beyond gave us the award for wettest liquid, and like what liquid? Thank you for all of your awards. We're looking.
They can write the Beyoncés on there, and then they could be in court with us too, and we'll be like, "Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah,
what happened with that game, man? What's
gunk in Star Wars Jedi Survivor? Not to be confused with Gonk, the droids that go gonk, but like
yeah, there's like that. There's like that oil gunk, grime that you sometimes have to trudge through and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's like a dude trying to scuba dive in it. You got to deal with that. Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
I don't like that. It's yucky. But I do like paint. I think paint is beautiful, and it's all over Street Fighter 6. It's just covering the all over. You kick someone in the head, and there's just like paint flourishes everywhere. It's such a nice, colorful.
Kimberly is a character who literally uses spray paint as a weapon. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sure there's other liquids in games that people would love to tell us about. So, you know, do that. Tell us. Let us know.
Your wettest liquid.
Yeah. And now next up, our next category, the enemy of the liquid, the sand, which is like if liquid was just small rocks. Sure. Yeah. Spider-Man 2 had a lot of that. They had a whole man of
the
sand.
The most.
They had so much sand.
A man of sand.
More than games that are like desert levels, because the sand was all over New York City where it shouldn't be. Right,
but I'll challenge
I don't know. We're all idiots, and we've played a lot of video games, and we're able to detach from the reality. But I could not stop thinking about who had to clean that up, because I have brain damage. But like, it was too much.
And if it was just in one area, it would get all it would look all weird.
It was on the roof.
How do you
put it on the roof
of
a 60-story building? How are you gonna get? We can push it on the street, and everybody's down there, and it's just falling on their faces. They're trying to get to work.
Basically, yep.
You know, you're sitting there having like a nice New York City hot dog, and all of a sudden there's a bucket of sand falls on it.
That would ruin so many hot dogs if there's just sand blowing around.
Vendors on the street vendors, man, they would have a case for.
Is a hot dog a sandwich, or is it sand covered?
It is now.
Anyway, there's also Atlas Fallen, which didn't get a ton of nominations, but JD, you're playing this right now.
It's literally a game about sand. Like, the whole plot is around how like sand has memory, and you're like sand surfing. It's literally your traversal ability is surfing on sand.
Okay.
Yeah,
that looks pretty cool.
In a conversation about things not getting enough nominations, I really hope Max gets his flowers for that is a hot dog a sandwich joke. That was very good. You deserve it. And a lot of people, they're going to listen to this show in their cars on the way to work, and then 12 hours later on the way home, they're going to be like, oh, I got it.
Well, speaking of sandwiches, I think isn't there like a playable sandwich in Mortal Kombat? There's a sand
technically,
ninja.
Yes. Garrus is like made of like the sands of time. I don't know if he's a witch technically.
Okay.
But he does have magical powers and
magic sand.
Kind of,
I mean, they like announced that game with sand. They were like, when you think Mortal Kombat, you think of one thing, sand in an hourglass.
Yeah.
Sandman time is passing. DLC.
Sure. I can see them doing, well, not sand. They do Candyman. I don't know. I guess Spider-Man 2 had a Sandyman and a Candyman, if you look at it. There was also...
He's on fire!
There was also Forspoken, which
it kind of came and went, but there was a whole region that was like very sandy and like mountainous, so it's good.
Give it an award. Give it an award. It's not going to be anything else.
I'm going to say this here, because I'm not going to say it on Nintendo Voice Chat, where they're all going to get mad at me over there. I love you guys over there. Hosted your show for like 3 months this year. Great time. Good fans. Good stuff. The amount of crap we gave Forspoken for its dialogue versus the amount of times the flowers in Super Mario Wonder talk exactly like they do in Forspoken. No one talks about it. Shame on you all. Also, Disney's Wish is just 90 minutes of the Forspoken Mario flower talk too. So that's the trifecta of just stop.
And
it.
Honestly, that
it.
Is such a small, like what we got in that trailer is like 5% of the dialogue in that.
I know.
Game. And it like, no, it's, but it's all everybody dogpiled on.
There's a castle in Mario Wonder where one of the flowers is like, I guess I'm in a castle now. How did I? And it's like, it's bad. Stop.
I'm used to having I got like a Fitbit, and it's an annoying bracelet. Like, it'll just buzz at me. And I'm like, ooh, did someone cool text me? And it says, no, you've been sitting still too long. I'm like, I hate this future. This is bad. All right.
Or when you get those emails that are like, you're on fire on LinkedIn. And you're like, I haven't gone there in months. What is wrong with you?
Let it burn. Also had sand, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, sand, Star Wars and sand
planet.
Have a complicated relationship.
Love
props to them
relationship.
For it
There's
being
a whole sandstorm. That's,
yeah,
that
and
you
it
have
was
to go
it
through.
Was that that's true. It did have a good sand adventure.
Very good sandstorm.
Yeah, and that was also then, props to them for doing it on Jedi and not on Tatooine, because we've done enough on Tatooine. But I'm excited to check out Tatooine and Star Wars Outlaws coming out next year from Ubisoft.
And then also Assassin's Creed Mirage, which is
can't forget that.
Set in a whole land of sand.
Sure, there it is. And next year we got Sandland. Look, this is gonna be a hot category next year. There's gonna be a lot of sandy games. There's Sandland.
Yep.
Other games. Anyway, speaking, I mentioned Star Wars Outlaws, another big open world Ubisoft game where you climb things and then probably liberate outposts that features a known IP from popular Disney-owned property. The Na'vi in Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, who are notably blue, but they're not the only blue characters, and so we're giving out an award for the bluest character in games in 2023.
This is the top
not
category.
Not here. Depressed, right? Not sad. Like,
we should have considered that.
We should okay. have.
Alan Wake. Sonic the Hedgehog and Mega Man are both, you know, they're no-brainers. They just, you know, they're like John Williams for like best score. They just have to show up and they're like, you're probably yep. going to walk out with an award.
Like, hey, I'm blue. I'm here.
Yeah. Who do you think is bluer? Sonic or Mega Man?
I think Mega Man is more blue by square inch footage of their body. I think technically Mega Man is more blue.
But Mega Man sometimes is not blue.
Mega Man is constantly not blue.
He switches to not blue, but Sonic also switches to not being blue.
Sonic turns yellow under like extreme circumstances, and it's when he has to pee. And then Mega Man turns every other color, every level, because like every time you beat a level, it's like you got, you know,
Snake Man power. Now you can be green.
Super snakes.
Okay. All right.
You shoot squiggles everywhere.
The other nominees, we already said not the Na'vi from Frontiers of Pandora, whatever it's called. I like it. Yeah, what do you have to do on Tuesday? I got to go on a camera and talk for an hour. What could go wrong? And I say four words in a row improperly.
Frontiers of Dandori.
All right. So yeah, those blue cat people. I hope that game doesn't totally suck. I'm excited to fly around on a pterodactyl, be blue.
The good thing is we haven't played it yet. None of us. People at IGN have at preview events, but we haven't. But we can declaratively state that it definitely has blue characters in it, and probably not a ton of sand, right? Mm-hmm. Mostly water.
Maybe it could be. Like it. Look, there could be sand under the water at the bottom if you go down there. Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out.
Might just be
enough.
Rocks.
Yes.
Yeah. There's also again really, really just showing up for Atlas Fallen. Jada, you put NyQuil.
NyQuil.
NyQuil's also blue or green.
NyQuil can
it's green.
Blue.
It's which is a different color.
booted up Atlas Fallen just like two or three nights ago, and imagine to my surprise that within the first 30 seconds of booting this game up, I'm playing as a Na'vi. Literally, I am this blue dude that is like 9 feet tall and has a ponytail down to my ankles. Like, I was like, how has nobody talked about this?
Okay,
like,
fair enough.
So, yeah.
All right, another category, well, not category, another blue character is Bluey.
Yeah.
From the Bluey, the video game. I played a little bit of this, and I was like, it's honestly such a drag that this is not more solid. I think we gave it like a 4 out of 10. It is a literal baby game, but, you know, baby games don't necessarily have to be terrible. And I feel like this one, it has like a mini game where it's like the floor is lava. And it's like very, very, very mild platforming. But like, if this is a game for children, I was like annoyed at how like it's just got like kind of wonky platforming at parts. And I was like, this is
right.
You know, I'm gonna put this on the back burner for another 2 years because my kid has no idea how to play this. And I don't know. It's one of the, like, you know, you have those like cute indie games where there's no like fail state, or you can't, you know, you just kind of play with things. I feel like that could have been a mode here, but they didn't do that. But who knows? Maybe they'll patch it. We got like a whole roadmap of Bluey post-launch stuff. You know, they're gonna nerf
he's
the
not
bosses.
Even, he's not that blue either. You know?
No, that's like, true.
He's yeah. like a. I mean, he's like a dark blue and a light blue, and then like a really light blue. But like,
yeah, no,
the
she's
the background there is more blue than Bluey
all right.
is.
So Bluey is disqualified because Brian says, Brian, we talked about stupid microtransactions. You paid $5 to make RoboCop blue. Is that correct?
I did. I'm an idiot and I'm part of the problem. I would say that 23's horse armor is not a horse armor at all. It's actually a man. And his name is Robert Copman. And you can play as him as RoboCop. Available now on your consoles. And yeah, I like the regular version of RoboCop. Again, first person game. You don't really see him much. No need to do this. But he appears in a lot of cutscenes. And most of them, like there's one where he's like in a video store and he's talking with his friend. He does a lot of briefings at the police station where he stands there like a horse, like just a complete idiot in the middle of the room and everyone else is doing important stuff. And he's just like, do you think it's okay that I still miss my wife? And he's like bright blue in my version because I paid $5. They also give you a gun.
So out of the box, not a nominee for Bluest character, but if you pay an extra $5, it's a contender.
You can write $5,
pay a little RoboCop, green, get a lot of blue. That's what we say.
Did they have any sales for Cyber Monday on blue RoboCop?
Yeah, no, they should have.
Don't answer that. That feels like
a match made in heaven.
All right, now our final category. This is a big one. This is one of the biggest ones for the whatever we're calling this, the Game of the Year award categories that no one else is doing for obvious reasons. The best Avatar game of 2023, and the nominees are Avatar: The Frontiers of Pandora, Avatar: The Last Airbender: Quest for Balance, and The Smurfs 2: Prisoner of the Green Stone.
I don't know how Smurfs in this category. But
they're like little avatars. They're like little.
Did anyone play Smurfs, or are we just a bunch of fake gamers?
No, but no one got mad at it.
You know what? I saw the gameplay video that Max did in his like November games, and it looks like a pretty competent game. Not good enough for me to spend $40 on right now.
Right.
But if
it's from Microid, so it could be a 7 or an 8 or something, maybe.
That hits the PlayStation Plus collection, I will be playing Smurfs 2.
I will be a prisoner of the Green Stone myself, because I will be captured by that game's many charms. I don't know. I also love that the Avatar: The Last Airbender was not apparently very good. People got bummed by that one. Mm-hmm. And we haven't played Frontiers of Pandora yet, which I accidentally wrote twice on the nominees.
Okay.
So that one's up for twice on account of those avatars are the largest. The Smurfs are very small. Smurfs. I don't, you know, that's what, which could be the best Avatar game? We'll have to find out soon enough. Also, if anyone else has a suggestion for what is another good Avatar game, it could be like an Avatar creator where you create your favorite avatar, or it could be a game where you just do sand bending or water bending or whatever it is they do in that show. I mean, I guess Diablo 4 could be a good Avatar game if you decide to role play as Avatar characters.
Actually, technically, yeah, since I did make Korra, I was literally an avatar. Writing it in, it's a write-in vote. Diablo 4.
Yeah, if you have a car in Forza that looks like a Na'vi, it actually can't be nominated because this is a PlayStation show. Get that blue car out of here. That's it. Those are the nominees for all of the categories. We're open for more. This is a real casual award show. We really like to run a not very complicated one, but I think we can make some fake trophies, you know, give them out to games.
Yeah. And
Gollum on the phone, see how he's doing over there.
Jeff Keighley and I guess, you know, Billy Crystal, whoever's hosting the Academy Awards this year. Little tip you got there from Max, a great way to end your award show is just to look right at the camera and go, that's it.
I ran out
of stuff to say, just go,
that's about it.
If you got any more ideas, let us know.
Isn't that how you tell someone to get out of your house in the Midwest? You just go, well, you slap your knees.
You stand up, you slap your knees, you stand up and go, that's it. All right.
Well, that's it. Get out of my house.
We're over. It's
done. All right. Thank you both for hanging out and goofing around. Everybody listening, watching, if you expected a better video audio product the week after Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
We've failed you, but we are having fun with these awards and we'd like your participation. We'd like to have some fun with that too. So hop on over to the Beyond Facebook group or, you know, shoot us an email beyond@IGN.com or jump at the comments on this video, whether you're watching on YouTube or on IGN. And, you know, you can also just, use the, what is it? Twitter. Is it, we still use that? Try to use that. Good luck with that.
See,
yeah. Hop on there, find out all sorts of great deals on, I keep getting that ad where it's like, this surgeon says, stop doing this to your blueberries. I don't know what he wants me to stop doing. I don't know.
Blueberries?
I don't know, but it's two words, blueberries. I'm like, okay, fair enough. AI-generated surgeon ad on Twitter. Thank you.
Well, there's do this. Doctors say you should do this to fix your stomach, and it's just like photos of the worms from Dune.
This
episode really has the energy of like the week between Christmas and New Year's. So apologies.
We got to do an episode for that too. That's going to be good.
It's going to be even more checked out.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
We have fun here.
Yeah, we had fun. Jada, Brian, is there anything you want to plug specifically?
Let's see. No, I mean, check out our Game Awards coverage. We're doing a live pre-show and post-show, and then we'll stream the whole thing. So we're gonna have some fun people on that one. I'm not one of them, but I'm helping produce it. And we're working on another show right now that is kind of around a game you might enjoy, where you should be hearing more about.
Smurfs 2, Prisoner of the Green Stone.
Smurfs 2. Yep, that's right. I've been a prisoner of that show for a while, trying to get it off the ground, but it's finally happening. Smurfs excitement is at fever pitch. they're
nice
describing.
Shooting, son. What's your name? Smurfy. All right. Yeah, that's about. I put up the, what is it, the December's biggest games video of the year. Go check that out. That's, you know, all of the game releases that you didn't know were happening, and maybe some that we got right. Go check that out. And on that note, beyond.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.